Okay, if we can begin, what we've got on the agenda today is the two bonding bills, Senate File 882, which is the cash bill, Senate File 2605, which is the omnibus bill, and for members who serve both on this committee and on Senator Stump's committee, particularly I want to make this clear to Senator Peterson. I don't expect as much drama today as we had in last night.
I agree, Mr. Chair.
Senator Champion agrees, and Senator Peterson can't handle too much more, so we want to...
Good. Yeah, I haven't looked yet, but it was your word, not yet.
Members who don't serve on the Senator Stump's committee, we can fill them in later. So, Senator Stump, whichever bill you would like to proceed with, obviously we've spent a lot of time with it in your committee, but if you might let us know what's going on with whichever bill you want, or if you want to explain, if it helps explain both bills, put them in the context of each other, however you'd like to handle it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what I'll do is I'll try to give some comments, kind of introductory comments, and then we'll go through the spreadsheet, which is a combined spreadsheet for both the cash bill as well as the GO bonding bill. And then we can go through. There's a couple of amendments that I have. We can take those up, and then we'll go through the language. Or actually, we'll go through the language first, and then deal with the amendments after that. I'm pleased to have Senator Scalzi, the vice chair of the bonding committee, join me up here. And I think... we had spent many, many hours together with a number of committee members, that bonding committee members, traveling the state. We started in September of last year, in 2013, and put on about 2,450 miles, visited somewhat over 170-some projects. And we had approximately, I think, 400 bills that were introduced. And so the amount of information that committee members and our staff has processed is enormous. And that includes the management and budget, who puts all these projects together. And so usually the information in those projects need to be expanded because quite often a lot of the information isn't as detailed as we need. Sometimes it doesn't give us the exact timing in terms of when the project starts and when the project ends, or when they need how much money and at a certain time. So there's kind of an investigative component to the capital investment process, and it certainly intrigues me, and I am very, very pleased that I had the opportunity to chair that committee. So it's a learning experience. A couple of kind of basic things that we wanted to stress right from the very beginning, and we tried to work in those principles all the way along. One was to figure out how we can kind of work together. We, in the past, under different chairmen, most of the trips were not made in buses or a bus, but quite a quite a few of the individuals would drive. And so we would have a train of 10 to 15 cars moving around the state. And this year what we wanted to do is to try to figure out a way that we could get people, members together, staff together, presentations from people who were whose projects we were viewing quite often would join us on the bus and give presentations as we actually moved from one place to another or viewed the sites or the projects that we were looking at. The reason being is that I think in the bonding area, we have to have kind of a cooperative type spirit between all members. And I think that's a very important component. Hopefully the bill reflects that. And as we move forward, we'll see. But that was certainly one of the principles. The other thing that we tried to gear our approach to was looking at kind of the basic infrastructure needs of the state. And quite often you'll hear that basic infrastructure. What does that really mean? As we traveled around the state, we found out that a lot of our communities were aging. many of our cities are 125, 150 years old. The components that make up those cities, a lot of us don't even see it. You know, it's the sewer underneath the streets. It's the water lines. It's the water tower. It's the kind of basic infrastructure that communities need. And so we tried hard to put the as much resources as we could into those areas. There's a handout that you have, members, Mr. Chairman and members, and this was kind of put together with the information that we were gathering. And it kind of addresses those basic infrastructures, you know, housing and the basic kind of core components of our communities. Housing, wherever we went in the state, whether it was Duluth or whether it was Roseau or Thief River or in southern Minnesota, it could be Jackson or Worthington or Marshall. Those communities all need housing, and so we really tried to emphasize that, and so did the governor was kind of leading that charge, as well as a lot of the supporters of that particular area. Another one was obviously traveling around the state is transportation. And transportation is an area that, whether you live here in the urban community or whether you live in the rural areas, it's very important. You have to have local roads. You have to have local bridges. You have to have a way of transit. You have to have a way of moving around, moving product, and that's what kind of builds the economy. We also, another very important component is our higher education. Many of the projects that we visited were we had businesses that would tell us that we could hire if we had 200 welders have 200 trained welders, we could place them in a job right today, and if we had 200 next week, we could place them. The demand for certain kinds of training is there, and businesses and manufacturers have to have that trained employee to expand and to deliver the products that they're asked to make. So higher education, we saw moving in that direction, and many good programs. The one that impressed us a lot, or impressed me a lot, was South Washington, the Tech College, Dakota Tech College, where the businesses teamed up with the students and the college, and we're working very closely to hire these students before they even graduated from the programs that they were in. Those students also benefited from their tuition being paid by the companies. Companies GM and Caterpillar and Ziegler, all of those companies need those kinds of trained people. And for whatever reason, if it's the economy that's gradually picking up or whether it's the retirement of older workers, there's a huge demand out there, and that was true with technicians of all sorts. It was true of tradespeople. Higher education's role is one that is probably right up there in terms of the importance of making our economy grow. Another one that fits basically the role of our government is corrections and public safety. And when you look at many of our state correctional institutions, our facilities, we have many of them are quite old, and some of them were buildings used for other things before they were correctional institutions. And so even though our correctional our system does a good job, the facility itself has to have a repair and maintenance and upgrading. And a classic example is up in St. Cloud, where the St. Cloud prison is the screening point for all prisoners that come into the state system. So it doesn't matter if they're coming from Roseau County or if they're coming from Carver County or Hennepin County, they all go up to St. Cloud and go through the screening process. And so when we went there and looked at that facility, it really was not adequate to handle all of the inmates that were coming through that system. So that's true with our security hospitals, our security hospital in St. Peter. It's true with the prison in St. Cloud, and in Moose Lake is the same way. We have to invest and make those facilities work for the people, for the state, and for the inmates that are there. Commissioner Roy, I was visiting with him about a week or so ago, and we are talking about, I think many of us have the understanding that once prisoners are committed to the correctional system in the state, you kind of forget about them. They're there for a long period of time. I believe he said that there is a relatively large turnover where prisoners are coming in, and I think he said that it was about 85% or so of the people that go into our system come back out of our system and enter our communities. And so the importance of having a facility, whether it's for retraining and having a program, we certainly want those prisoners that have served time to come out with some sort of a skill, some sort of a way to be sure that they can adapt to the communities where they go to or return to. So those are some of the key components. Economic development, I mentioned a little bit, very important. And we tried to connect these dots, so to speak, produce a bill that that has, for the most part, these components in them, as well as obviously a host of other things for addressing the needs around the state. Maybe at this time it would be good to have Mr. Jensen go through the spreadsheet. And the spreadsheet, as I mentioned earlier, is really a compilation of both the GO bonding as well as the cash portion of the bill. And one comment on that is that reflecting the kind of the leadership agreement that was put in place last year, that's how we ended up with two bills. The agreement reflected an agreement that said that roughly $1 billion would be acceptable in a biennium for bonding GO portion of the bonding, in visiting with the leadership minority and majority this year, that would be acceptable to use some of the cash for a cash portion, which is beyond the 846 in GO bonding. So the cash portion of the bill is $200 million, and that's the target that we worked with. It was a little larger before, but as most things, it had some shrinkage in trying to find the right target. So it's $846 million in GO bonds and $200 million in cash. So if I could ask Mr. Jensen to go through the spreadsheet.
Senator Stumpf, Mr. Jensen, before we begin, there's a technical amendment, which I think I understand from Mr. Nauman is reflected in the spreadsheet. So would it be easier to adopt that amendment first, and then we're all working from the same numbers? What, Mr. Jensen? What?
Mr. Chairman, that would be fine. I guess I don't have that amendment right in front of me here.
Okay, well, let's have that amendment distributed just because we're taking, I apologize, Senator Stumpf, for taking this a little bit out of order, but.
Mr. Chairman, it would be A32.
Yeah, so if we could have that distributed.
Sorry.
I can explain.
And members, this is, I believe, basically a technical amendment. Then everything will be the same in terms of language and spreadsheet.
Mr. Chairman, I think council has asked me to maybe go walk through this for members. I think it's made its way around. Last night after the Capital Investment Committee completed its work, we found a couple of numerical issues that we wanted to deal with. On the amendment, lines 2 through 5 basically correct the summary at the front of the bill. There's some summary updates there. The language bringing in the IRRRB reflects the addition of a Thomasoni amendment in committee last night. Page 6 is an update to the cost of issuance. That would be line 1.6. We found a numerical issue on the cancellations in the back of the bill, so the summary on line 1.7 is updated, reflecting that. The Tubman project, which I'm sure Mr. Jensen will speak about in a moment, is reflected on lines 8 and 9. There's some language there that allows dollars already spent to count towards the non-state match. The target was slightly underspent in addition to the cancellation changes, so there's a change to the to one of the projects. I believe this is the asset preservation for some of the historic sites. That's line 10. Again, the bond sale authorization price is changed. And then the overall, there's an overall update on the total bond authorization on line 12. And I believe all of these numbers are now conform with the spreadsheet that Mr. Jensen intends to walk through.
Mr. Jensen, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, yes.
Okay. So if we could, Senator Stumpf moves the adoption of the A32 amendment, again, as explained by Mr. Nauman. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, you have a spreadsheet in front of you. It has, as Senator Stumpf explained, the cash and the bonding and the total for the Senate. It compares it to what the governor recommended. I won't go through and read each line for you. I'm sure you can read it better than I can, but we'll go through department by department, and I'll highlight some of the items there. Page one, the University of Minnesota, starting on line eight, asset preservation. You can see the Senate has $5 million more than the governor recommended. And then on line 31, that's a project in Duluth for a chemical science building. I think the total project will be about $36 million. The Senate is providing $1.5 million to get that project started through pre-design and design. For Minsky, the state colleges and university, line 41 is their HEPR asset preservation. Again, the Senate is recommending $5 million more. Line 42, there was a request of about $20 million, which the governor did not support, nor did the Senate, for demolition of obsolete buildings and spaces on campuses. All the rest of the items are in the priority of the Minsky board. If you go down to line 50, the Senate is funding the clinical science facility at Mankato of $25 million, which the governor didn't, and also the Rochester Community and Technical College of $1 million. On line 59 to 64, the governor had three more projects that the Senate did not recommend funding. Under the Department of Education, the Red Lake School, the Senate proposal would build a new kitchen, new dining facilities, make it much larger, and some access to the dining hall and kitchen, so much easier for the students to enjoy their lunch hour. Under line 134, state academies, there was a reduction in their asset preservation. But as you can see, they're getting a new building, a new residence hall there. For the Purvidge Center, on line 152, made a reduction in their asset preservation. Mr. Chairman, on page two, natural resources, asset preservation is $10 million instead of 23. Everybody knows that we had to reduce our original target by some $66 million, so you'll see some reductions throughout this spreadsheet. Line 160 is the flood hazard mitigation, $18 million. That's a reduction from the request. Line 163 is a reduction from the governor's recommendation. I think there's some money in the other conference committee for this process. Vermilion State Park development, that's a continuing process, $14 million. Let's go down to line 233. There's four projects for the Senate: East Grand Forks, Fort Snelling, Upper Post, Fountain Lake Restoration, and Lake Zumbro. That's a continuation of the reclamation that's been going on for 2 or 3 years, I think. Pollution Control Agency, the difference there is, this is, the 2.6 is for Becker County, and there was also a request for a transfer station, and I believe it was in Hubbard County. Board of Soil and Water Resources, the governor had no recommendation for funding that, but the committee thought it was important to keep these programs going, so there's $3.5 million. Agriculture is the same. The zoo gardens, we took two reductions there, asset preservation and the heart, but the Discovery Bay renovation, the $3 million should complete that project. Under administration, this is the first use of the general fund money that you'll see in the spreadsheet. The Senate has $126 million of cash for the state capital, and the governor has that under the bonding provisions. There's a slight reduction in the asset preservation. Line 308 and 332 are two important projects for the Hmong Leo Veterans Memorial, which will be on the state capitol grounds. And the Workers' Memorial, it needs some finishing work to complete that project. Mr. Chairman, on line page 3, the governor and the Senate is recommending the Regional Sports Center in Marshall. The Mighty Ducks Arena, there's a problem using Freon. It must be replaced by the year 2020, so the $1.5 million provides a start to that process, and that's from the cash account. There's language in the bonding bill that deals with further renovation or cleaning up and improvement of ice arenas. The minute services, that's to fix up space that the state has moved out of. Military affairs, a reduction in their asset preservation. Public safety, there were two new facilities at Montgomery, St. Louis County. Under the transportation area, local bridge and local roads on 407 and 408. You can see we added $25 million for bridges and $35 million for local roads. So both of those totals are up to $40 million or $80 million for those two programs. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, several lines down, 418, the Senate has some rail service improvement monies. And on line 419, there's port development assistance, and there's some language in the other bill for the Minnesota River to be eligible for some of this funding. The Chisholm-Hibbing Airport is the same, and the International Falls Airport's the same. On line 424, the Anoka County Armstrong Boulevard interchange, that's become quite a problem because of all the oil trains coming from North Dakota, and there's long delays, and it's a safety problem there. So there's $8 million recommended from cash. The Virginia Highway 53 relocation, utilities and trails of $19.5 million. Ramsey County TCAP redevelopment. The governor recommended 29. The position here is 22 million. The $7 million, which is difference, is the construction money needed in 2016 or 2017. So what that means is the county or DOT or someone will have to come back and ask for the money again in 2016. Red Wing Levy, there's $1.5 million or so to get that project started to redo the waterfront where the street floods. And 464 is a Richfield 77th Street underpass. That's just the money to do some land acquisition and pre-design. Mr. Chairman, as you can see on line 465 is one of the priority areas. $154 million of cash and bonding in this transportation area. Mr. Chairman, on page 4 under Met Council, line 475 with $10 million, I believe this is for the bus rapid transit on Snelling Avenue. The Metro Orange Line, the Senate didn't recommend that, but there's two newer projects. You'll see on line 501 and 503, which is the Botneau and the Gateway projects. Metro Regional Parks on 478, there was a reduction there from $5 million to $4 million. Line 480 is the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden Preservation. It's just for the grounds. It does not spend any money on the actual artwork there. The amount was raised from the governor's rank of $7 million to $8 million. The inflow and infiltration grants was reduced by $1 million. Now, light rail transit, that's a blue line extension, getting started for $1 million. Fridley Springbrook request was $5.5 million. We reduced that by $500,000. The Gateway Corridor goes east on 94. Inver Grove Heights Heritage Park is a continuing project to develop a trail in Inver Grove Heights. Maplewood Fish Creek land acquisition. They can buy 70 acres of prime land for $318,000. Oakdale Lake Trail and Boardwalk, it's an ADA compliance and access issue. St. Paul Como Park transportation and access, the request was $8.9 million. Recommendation is $6 million. They'll have to decide whether to do the area around the actual zoo or the park or the athletic fields, which are on the southern end of the park. Getting a start on the St. Paul Vento Natural Sanctuary. We're on the east side, kind of below the bluff where Metro State is. Washington and Dakota County's regional trail bridge that will run into the new bridge and Highway 61 coming out of Hastings. And the West St. Paul North Urban Regional Trail Bridge is over Robert Street, which is one of the busiest streets in the metro area. Human Services, the recommendations are basically the same as the governor, it's a reduction in asset preservation, and on line 542 and 543, added some money for the Remembering with Dignity. Excuse me. 543 is the St. Paul Dorothy Day Center, which is way over used currently, $15 million. They can also apply for housing infrastructure bonds for the non-public part of their development. Veterans Affairs, a reduction again in asset preservation. Same on Minneapolis campus at Laverne and Silver Bay. There's three projects for veterans memorials, line 571, 572, and 574. Corrections Department, a reduction in their asset preservation. This contains a recommendation for the Shakopee Women's Prison security fence. Line 583, we're phasing the project for the intake at St. Cloud Prison. And 607 is the Northeast Regional Correctional Center. It's kind of a five-county operation. I believe it's in Saginaw, Minnesota. So page... page five is Department of Economic Development. The department in the governor's record is $5 million for business, public infrastructure, with a reduction of $1 million there. And transportation economic development is a reduction of $1 million there. Where, as Senator Stump was explaining, that in the other operating budget, the Minnesota Investment Fund received $30 million in this biennium, which was new money, and also is a new job creation program that received $24 million. So these kind of all work together here. There's a couple of smaller projects for Bagley, Clarus City, the Duluth North Shore Theater. There was a slight reduction there. Duluth Zoo, if you remember, that was devastated by the flood a couple years ago, so this will help them get some pre-designing, get the project or the Duluth asset back online. Fawson Street is a smaller project. Grand Rapids Reef Regional Performing Arts Center, $3.8 million. On line 624 is the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System. Recommendation of $20 million by the governor. The suggestion here is $13 million. But in the bill, you'll see that they can spend their federal dollars as part of their local match for this project. The original amount is like $69 or $70 million to complete the project. This is a start from the bringing the water into Laverne, Minnesota. Line 60.
Mr. Chair, could I just ask
Senator Wistrom?
Could I just ask if Mr. Jensen could get closer to the microphone? It is a little difficult to hear at times.
All right. Thank you so much. So to testify, if you do so by getting closer to the mic, that'd be great. You may continue. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the Mankato Civic Center addition on line 625 should complete that project. This is one that's been in and out of the bills and recommended for a number of years. The 626 is a Minneapolis Nicollet Mall revitalization. The Senate is supporting the governor's rec here of $20 million. The Park Rapids Regional Arts Center is a newer project at $2.5 million. Rochester Civic Center expansion, there's a reduction there, but some of that money was used like for on the Lake Zumbro Lake Reclamation Project. The St. Cloud Convention Center, completing the parking lot there. There was a reduction there of about $560,000. The St. Louis County Economic Opportunity and Range Health Building. The governor recommended $2 million, but the committee wanted to raise that up closer to what they needed. So there's $6 million recommended in. Partly that comes from a reduction for the Giants Ridge project, which we'll see in a couple of minutes here. Money for the St. Paul Palace Theater renovation. Governor recommended $6 million. The Senate is suggesting $500,000 to get the project started. The Truman Stormwater project is at $1.25. It's in here because it didn't really meet any of the PFA or PCA programs. It's funded here. Virginia Northern Heights Industrial Park, government recommended that. The Senate at this time is not recommending that, as there's money in some of the other programs within DEED that they could apply for. The Hermantown Regional Wellness Center, that money is recommended from the cash of $250,000. The Lake Superior Popular Water Pipeline, that's to complete the project. They have received funding for a couple of sessions for that project. The Historic Pioneer and Soldier Cemetery in Minneapolis, $1.9 million. This is has received statewide burials, and I think the time goes back to the Civil War when some of the soldiers were buried there. Sandstone has a small recommendation for their industrial utility cost. The St. Paul Museum of American Art is $300,000 from cash. Public Media Commons, which is TPT, is $9 million. St. Paul Ordway is $4 million to complete the expansion there of the McKnight Center. And the Park Square Theater is recommended at $200,000 from the cash. Thief River Falls Public Infrastructure Improvements. They're getting a new hospital south of town, and this helps out with their water and sewer that will be needed at the hospital. Mr. Chairman, I think I missed the item on line 631, the Children's Museum expansion of $14 million. for the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation, the Giants Ridge Event Center. It's supported here $1 million, but the difference was moved up to the St. Louis County Equal Opportunity and Health Building. Public Facilities Authority, you can see it's pretty much the same as a governor, except for the Spirit Mountain Duluth amount was reduced down to $500,000. That will be for pre-design and design only. Oslo Water Mains, the $275,000 is some cash. In the last year or so, they've had like 28 or 35 water breaks in their water supply system, so they need to do an entire study of the city. And line 765 is originally the wastewater ponds were built on the airport, and the birds are creating quite a problem there, so they want to eliminate the ponds and connect the sewer to the city, and that's $650,000. On page 6, Mr. Chairman, the Housing Finance Agency. Governor recommended $40 million from the infrastructure bonds and $10 million of GO bonds. The Senate is suggesting $70 million infrastructure bonds and $10 million of the GO bonds. This is one of the highest bonding or funding recommendations for the Housing Finance Agency in a long time. Minnesota Historical Society, Oliver Kelly Farm has been before the committee many years, so they're recommending of $10.6 million there. Historic Sites Asset Preservation, if you remember, there's 30-plus sites around the state, and this money goes out to support those sites. Fort Snelling Pre-Design, and then there's also money for county and local historic grants of $1 million. Mr. Chairman, on line 808, you'll see there's a cancellation of $3.4 million. If it starts on page 52, I think, but there's 40 items in there. They go back to the year 2000 up to 2010. Some of the amounts are large, $987,000, and there's one in there for $5 that we want to clean out those accounts. Line 817 is our comparison number. You see under the governor's rec, he had about $946 million of just the GO bonds. The Senate is at $846 million. So they're under the governor about $99 million on the GO bonds. If you look on line 822, that's the total funding in this bill. The governor had $1,030,000. Under the Senate column, it's $1,165,000. So in total, about $134 million over the governor in total projects. Mr. Chairman, on page 7 of 7 is just a summary of all the agencies and their total projects authorized. And then there's a little summary of the general fund cash projects, too, just listing the projects again. You've seen those in the agencies up above, but this is that $198 million of cash projects. The difference between 198 and 200 million target, we had to reduce this for the debt service of this bill. The debt service of this bill in this biennium is $1,252,000.
All right. Thank you so very much. Any questions? Any questions on the spreadsheet from the members? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe at this time we have the, I think, the Senate file 822 before us. And that's the cash
882. I'm sorry. And that's the cash bill. And I think that before we lay that on the table, there is a technical, I think it's technical amendment. Is that correct? Technical amendment, A5 amendment that we could deal with, and then we could lay Senate File 882 on the table.
Senator Stump, I have one question around process. So I understand that we have the A5 amendment and we can deal with that, but I think I heard you say that you want to lay Senate File 882 on the table once this technical amendment is adopted, should the committee choose to do that. So can you help me understand why we would need to lay it on the table?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's a good point. We could adopt it, and if there's, you know, if everyone's in agreement on that, that would be fine. We could adopt it and send it to the floor, I believe.
All right. All right. So then let's deal with the A5 amendment. Senator Stump is going to walk us through the A5 amendment. But first of all, I want to make sure that all the committee members have a copy of the A5 amendment. They appear to have it. Senator Stump,
thank
you can walk us through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll ask Ms. James to walk us through this.
All right, Ms. James.
Mr. Chair, Senators Stump and members, the A5 has three changes to the bill on lines 1.2 through 1.5 of the amendment. This is a change to the Mighty Ducks appropriation. In the cash bill, we appropriate money to the Mighty Ducks, and we specify the paragraphs of the Mighty Ducks statute that identify the purposes that that appropriation can go to. And then in the bonding bill, Senate File 2605, we amend that statute, and the paragraph letters change. So this is a sentence suggested by the revisor's office to make clear that the appropriation in the cash bill for the Mighty Ducks program is supposed to go to the purposes that are in paragraphs G and K currently, and both of those have to do with renovation. And then on the amendment, line 1.6, it's amending the bill on page 3, line 23. For the port development assistance appropriation, the language currently says that the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District is a port authority, but we just wanted to be clear that that means for purposes of this program, there are port authority, not for all purposes. And then on page or on the amendment, line 1.7 in the amendment, which amends page 4, line 32, the St. Paul Museum of American Art asked that the language for their appropriation be changed slightly to allow them to use the appropriation on design as well as pre-design.
All right, any questions on the A5 amendment from any of the members?
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I don't appear to have the language yet in front of me. I've been refreshing my computer, and so I'm wondering if we could either lay it on the table or delay until that's I could get a chance to look at it.
So, Senator Westrom, we are working on it. They are going to release it right now, from my understanding.
Mr. Chair, while we're at it, I have an amendment as well. I assume there might be other amendments, and then this bill may get laid on the table if I understood the author right. Is that the process that we'd look at, or would we lay it on the table before we'd offer other amendments?
Well, if you could hold just one moment, I'm going to switch chairs with our capable chair.
Senator Westrom, I think the intent, and I was upstairs, I apologize, but that Senator Stump, I think you wanted to lay the one bill on the table. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, no, actually my intent is to, by the end of the day, get both of these bills up to the floor.
No, I'm, yeah, I'm sorry, that I misunderstood by coming in here. We intend to pass the bills today from the committee, but I thought you were going to, in terms of amendments, as to which bill you wanted to take up.
Mr. Chair, if I might help, there's an A5 amendment, Mr. Chair, that is before the body. But Senator Westrum is having some difficulty receiving
that. I picked that up, and you said I was pretty capable, so I was hoping I could.
Exactly, Mr. Chair.
But apparently not as capable as you thought I was.
Mr. Chair, just remember, you said that and not me. But you are always very capable. I see you as the capable one.
That's not a bad adjective. Maybe you can think of some others as well as the day proceeds.
The division on that?
So, Senator Westrum, we're waiting for a...
Mr. Chair.
Okay. So, Senator Dibble, do.
Is it possible to ask a question on the A5?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, I didn't catch. What would the lower Minnesota River Watershed District be doing with the Port Development Assistance Funds?
Mr. Jensen can.
Mr. Chairman, what they want to do is dredge the river for boat traffic, barges, and what they need to do, and they found a place to store the disposal material and a road that goes to it, and they would be eligible for some of the money under the port recommendation in the bonding bill.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Neville.
No. How much of the $500,000 will that take?
Mr. Chairman, the first $400,000 is for the Winona Port development, and then $100,000 would be available for the Minnesota River project.
Okay, other questions? So, Senator Westrum, we have the A5 amendment in front of us. Does everybody have the amendment at this point? Okay. So if we have the A5 amendment, it's been explained. Senator Stumpf moves adoption of the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Do we have other amendments to Senate File 882, which is the cash portion of the bill? Anything else? Otherwise, on Senate File 882, Senator Stumpf moves that Senate File 882 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. All right. Then we have Senate File 2605 in front of us. Do we have other amendments? We have the technical amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stumpf.
Would you like to have Senate Counsel walk through the 2605?
Certainly. Ms. James, would you like to?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll start with Article 2, which begins on page 58 of the bill. Section 1 about waivers is a conforming change that goes along with some changes to the bridge improvement program later in the bill. Section 2 grants Minnesota Management and Budget the authority to sell bonds through a negotiated sale as opposed to competitive bidding for a limited time. Section 3 and 4 are changes to the statutes that require certain reports. It's really the cancellation report and then the authority of the commissioner to cancel bond sale authorizations. And this adds the appropriation bonds to the list of kinds of bonds about which they're going to report. It's the appropriation bonds issued after December 31st, 2013 that will in the future be included on those reports. Section 5 is a provision that requires that U.S. Steel be used in projects that are of a capital nature that receive appropriated money from the state. There is an exception in Subdivision 2 that provides that the requirement need not be met if there are insufficient quantities or materials of insufficient quality, or if it raises the cost of a project, is otherwise not practicable, or conflicts with federal law. Section 6, 7, and 8 all add some people to the list of people who receive notifications that projects, capital improvement projects, have reached a certain stage in their process. So we had originally added the chair of the Senate Capital Investment Committee, since the chair of the House Capital Investment Committee was already one of the people who received the report. And then last night, through amendment, we added the ranking members of the Capital Investment Committee to receive those notifications. On page 62 of the bill, section 9 is a modification to the Library Improvement Grant Program that allows appropriations under that program to be used to remedy hazardous conditions for health and safety reasons. And then on page 62 of the bill, section 10 provides a clarification, or provides that the factors that are listed in statute for MNSCU to use in prioritizing capital improvement projects are not in priority. The factors that are listed in statute are not prioritized themselves. Then on page 63, section 11 and 12 are some modifications to the bridge grant program, and it revives a program, this program, and then makes some changes to it that I can detail if you would like. They're detailed in the summary, and they're non-money, so I'm not sure how interested you all are.
Mr. Chair, I had picked up this language as well in a bill that I presented and passed off the floor a few days ago, so we just need to make sure where we want to carry these provisions and make sure they're exactly as we want them to be.
Well, we can watch out for that as these bills progress. We have several places where between finance, capital investment, and third bills, where we have language tracking different bills. So obviously individual senators will watch out for that. Council will watch out for that.
All right.
But appreciate the note.
Section 13, which is on page 64 of the bill, beginning on line 18, changes the name of an advisory committee for the local road improvement program. It also adds a couple of accounts to the list of accounts that the committee makes recommendations on. It adds the local road account for routes of regional significance and the rural road safety account.
Mr. Chair.
Section 14.
Sir Dibble.
This provision is traveling in another bill as well, too, so we have to keep an eye on that, too.
Okay.
Section 14 is the Mighty Ducks change. That starts on page 64 of the bill. And this provides for the grants to be and when these grants are given out, the priority be given to projects that improve air quality and projects that eliminate R22. Under federal law, by 2020, we have to cease use of the refrigerant R22, and so the ice rinks need to be modified to accommodate a different material. Section 15 on page 66 is the sprinkler provision, and this provides that state building code, state fire code, and political subdivision code and ordinances are not allowed to require the installation of fire sprinklers. This applies to any new or existing single-family detached dwelling unit.
So now I know why Senator Senchum had joined us this morning. So, okay.
And then section 16 on page 66 is a provision that sets a deadline of December 31st of 2017 for some changes to elevator systems to meet code requirements. It sets this deadline for elevators that are in a residential common interest ownership property having five or fewer floors, not including the basement.
So, Mr. Chair?
Sir Dibble.
Why do we have Section 615 in here? I mean, this is a very controversial piece. It's going to make it hard for some of us to vote for this bill.
Right.
Senator Dibble, I don't know. The language is what was in the bill as presented to committee last night. So I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Sieben.
I just want to, I think that this has become sort of I don't want to say it's a joke, but I think that like everybody laughs about how often this provision is showing up in different bills. And I haven't really spoken about it on the floor, but as someone who has been, knows people who have been impacted by residential fires, I just think that this is really short-sighted for the legislature to start to mandate that any time into the future we would not, that the building code could never include the installation of fire sprinklers. It just seems so short-sighted, members, because if the price comes down, for example, it could end up having a really dramatic effect on saving people's lives. I mean, we look at the federal, I forgot the name of it, but the institute that sets recommendations for safety in cars. I saw in the newspaper last week just recommended that beginning in a couple years, all cars that are sold in the United States will have to have a backup camera so that little kids aren't run over when their parents back out of the garage or out of the driveway is the case that happens. And yes, it will, and it will mean that new cars sold in the United States will end up costing more. But for us to say that any time into the future we're never going to allow for the use of sprinklers in residences, I know it has a big impact right now on the, it could have a impact on the price of new homes that are sold. But for us to say that this is a policy that the state Senate believes is important, I think is short-sighted when you look out for the safety of Minnesota residents.
Mr. Chair.
And so personally, I'm opposed to it.
Senator Dibble.
This doesn't even really relate to the bonding bill. I mean, it just says the state building code, the state fire code, or a political subdivision of the state by code, by ordinance, or in any other way, must not require the installation of fire sprinklers, any fire sprinkler system, components, or automatic fire extinguishing equipment or devices in any new or existing single-family detached dwelling unit. It has nothing to do with how we spend bonding dollars at all. It regulates activity in the code, period. I don't see the nexus with the bonding bill at all. So it's inserting a highly controversial, basically poison pill provision that's been hotly contested on the floor into a bill in which we're trying to build some consensus. I don't know why we would go down this path.
I can't speak to that. I'm not the author of the bill. The bill was it was in the bill last night as presented to Senator Stumpf's committee, so you might want to inquire of Senator Stumpf. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would inquire why this is in there. It was already in another bill that left the floor, and I don't know why it has to be in here, too. I just need to say that every fire chief in the five cities and the fire departments in the five cities that I represent are opposed to taking that out. And if we're really looking out for local governments and local government control in any way, this certainly deprives local governments of even making ordinances or decisions about that themselves. So can you kind of get an explanation of how this ended up in here when it already went through in another bill that I opposed in the first place?
Mr. Chairman and members, I think one of the rationales was that it has passed, I think, the floor at least twice, maybe three times. And we have upwards of literally hundreds of millions of dollars in housing money. And when you look at the additional cost of some of these sprinklers add into the cost of housing, that it
does have a connection to what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Well, if our concern is how we spend our bonding dollars, this provision doesn't speak specifically to that. I mean, we can, and we do that frequently. We put riders or we put policy language that requires that if our bonding dollars are spent on buildings, for example, or on lighting, that there are certain standards or certain energy code standards, or with lighting we have the dark sky standards, that sort of thing. This is a much broader policy provision than confining how our bonding dollars are spent. So there is no nexus that I see.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Sieben.
And I would just add, Senator Stump, that a couple weeks ago I was at the opening or the ribbon cutting of a Habitat for Humanity dwelling in Cottage Grove. And when we were touring the facility, I noticed that there were sprinklers in this family's home, which was a attached condo, or I don't know what to call it. But I would assume that there are some single-family detached dwelling units, but I think this is an expansion from what the fire code already, my understanding of it at least, requires that sprinklers are in attached dwelling units. And to Senator Dibble's point, I just think that this is not not a great place to have this provision included. I'd also point out that I believe the governor has vetoed bills over this provision before, and I have not spoken to his office about this being in our bonding bill, so I'm not saying that I want to speak that he has weighed in on this at all. I don't know of that at all, but I just know that when this provision came up before, he has vetoed a bill over it, so I believe that he's probably opposed to this as well. And I think because, like, I'm not going to speak for him, but I just think that we have to think about the long-term implication of passing this sort of provision. Do we really want to mandate that the state building code could never require the installation of fire sprinklers? I think is really short-sighted.
Senator Stumpf, if you wish to say anything else, or if Ms. James wants to continue.
Mr. Chairman, I think the there's one state in the union that has that provision, and that's California. Over 40 states have not adopted sprinklers. And in border communities where you have none of the states around the state of Minnesota has that provision, and then with that sprinkler provision, you're asking somewhere around $10,000 to $13,000 more. And those homes that are supplied water by wells is going to even be more expensive. And so I really think that provision steps beyond steps beyond, I think, the boundaries of safety.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Stump, I completely respect your point of view on this subject, and I think there is a fair policy debate to be had here. And the points you just made are good ones, and I respect them completely. But I think it can be fairly said that I and others have a different point of view on this subject, and it has been very controversial and very hotly contested on the floor. And by including a provision here that has no nexus to bonding or how bonding dollars are spent, you're basically holding us hostage to support a provision that we have never supported, in order to support a larger package that has other items that are really, really important to us. I think that's a pretty poor way to try to get a controversial piece through. That we've had a lot of debate about, sticking it in something to leverage a piece that we disagree with. It was stuck in another larger bill just a couple weeks ago, which then You know, I voted against the larger underlying bill because it got stuck in. You know, you're putting me in a position of voting for something that I am well on record over many debates and many votes as opposed to leveraging some stuff that's pretty darn important to me and to my community. And I just think it's a poor way to do larger policies not related to bonding.
Well, let's let Ms. James proceed with the bill, and then we can have discussion on the bill, amendments on the bill, whatever members would like to do.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 17 is more relating to the sprinklers. Section 17 is a provision that requires contractors, when they enter into an agreement with a new customer, to offer the option of sprinklers and to include an opt-in form. Section 18 is a provision that adds veterans to those who are can get a preference for housing for projects that are funded with housing infrastructure bonds. Section 19 is, and this is on page 69, authorization for the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to authorize to issue $70 million in housing infrastructure bonds. That's something that Mr. Jensen mentioned in the spreadsheet. Section 20 requires, this also has to do with the Minnesota Housing Finance Infrastructure Bonds. It requires them to certify annually the amount that that they've issued and let us know what the amount is that we need to pay for debt service. Sections 21 through 30 are modifications to prior appropriations in bonding bills. Each of these provisions makes a modification of either an extension of a date by which they have to use the funds or modifies the language a bit to allow them to make use of the appropriations that were made to them previously. Section 31 on page 77 is the Bayport land transfer provision. This was in Senator Herr's lands bill that passed on the Senate floor 65-0 last week. Because the property had been financed with bond proceeds at one point in time, it requires a three-fifths vote and to be in a bill that originates in the House, and so we have it here in the bonding bill. And Section 32 is the transfer of two schools. The first is Harumbe School, and this is a transfer of the property, I should say. There are other provisions that deal with changes to these schools that went in the education bill, but we just have here in the bonding bill the transfer of the property. The Harumbe School from the East Metro Integration District to the Roseville School District, and the Crosswind School also from the East Metro Integration District to, in this case for Crosswinds, to the Perpich Center for the Arts. Both of those properties had been bond financed at some point and so are in the bonding bill to transfer them in an appropriate bill. Section 33 is a revisor's instruction to change a headnote for the library construction grants, and Section 34 is the effective date.
Thank you. Do we have further questions for Ms. James or Senator Stumpf on what's in the bill? Senator Dibble?
I move to delete Section 15 from the bill, and I request a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
I just have a quick question for Senator Dibble relating to that. So is it your intent to delete Section 16 as well, which is a similar code provision?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Delete Section 15 to Section 17, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
17. Yes. Oh, no. That's Senator Pierce.
I asked a question about Section 16. Was it your intent to delete Section 16 as well, which is a similar provision relating to the code?
Mr. Chair, my concern is over the fire sprinklers issue.
Okay. We have
interest rates are so low.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I guess I would like to hear the comments from the I guess I already have heard the comments from the chair that he thinks this should stay in the bill. And I think Senator Dibble makes the case. We have talked about this for an awful long time, and he also referred to the cost. But my question to Senator, to the author is, and Senator Sieben brought this up about the governor potentially taking action against this bill. Has the governor's office weighed in on this particular issue, Senator Stump?
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, no. At this point, he hasn't.
Thank you.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I would speak against the motion. I think this is one aspect of the bill that ought to move forward. Not sure all of it is that way, but, you know, Representative Kahn taught me a long time ago, bury things early and often, and this is just an effective way to get some common sense legislation through this body. And so I would urge members to vote this down, keep it in the bill. Don't take good pieces out of the bill at this point.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would speak in favor of this amendment. As I previously said, we had this in another bill already on the floor. It did pass. I voted against it. I see that we have a number of fire chiefs here and fire department people here, and they're very concerned. This is a issue that if we do sprinklers, it could save lives. It could save lives of our firefighters and the families that own the homes. So I really think that as long as we have it through one bill, let's keep it out of the bonding bill. There's a project in here that I've been trying to get for 12 years that has passed the House and Senate three times and was vetoed by a former governor. For the first time, this governor has said he would approve it. And I would just hate to see, I hate to have to make the decision between a project that's so important to the people I represent and another project that is so important to saving the lives of firefighters. I don't want to have to make that decision on this bill.
Says Lori.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, I support Senator Dibble's amendment. I would acknowledge, I think it would not be a good time for a fire in my district right now, since most of the chiefs are here.
I think they're in contravention of the fire code because the aisles are all crowded.
Okay. But, the reasons for support have been eloquently stated.
Further discussion on Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, I wondered if you given all the comments, if you just say again as the author kind of where you stand right now. I'm somebody who's always voted against the sprinkler mandate. And putting in this is a pretty difficult position to be in sitting here. Although I really appreciate Senator Westrom's comments that put it, a different perspective. What are your thoughts, Senator Stump?
Well,
Mr. Chair, one other comment. Senator Stump, as you know, I spent many years as your vice chair, and so it does. I do respect what you bring to the bonding bill, and I don't take it lightly. So, thank you,
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Bonoff, and committee members. I think the provision to require sprinklers in all new homes is going to have a large negative impact on certainly on the cost of homes, new homes, and the code, if you read it, says that it's any homes that are over 4,500 square feet.
So what happens to all those homes that are under 4,500 square feet? I mean, if it's so important for those people who build those larger homes, it ought to be important for those who build smaller homes. But there's the only state in the union that has that code is California. All four, I think it's 41 states have repealed or put provisions saying that they don't want to have four sprinklers onto new homes. And you're going to have people making decisions that, you know, people only have a certain amount of money when they build a new home. So when you add an extra $10,000 to $13,000 on your home, they're going to make a decision to do something less expensive in some other area, which may not be good for them either. It could be handicap accessible doors. It could be something else. So I think that in all of the information that I've read, the quality of the smoke alarms that we have now, they're required. They're doing a good job. And I think the uncertainty of the sprinkler system, on especially in rural areas where you have wells trying to supply the water system and the pressure system for these sprinklers, it's going to be, I think, a real burden on the housing industry or the people who build new homes. So that's why I'm opposed to it and wanted to get this into, you know, before members and into a conference committee.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just my comment, I do have a son who's in the building trade, and I'm talking with him a lot of times about codes and quite restrictive, of course, coming from him as somebody who's a builder. But that tells me one thing, and that the state of Minnesota has done a good job of dealing with fire hazard materials, dealing with fire hazard splits of one apartment to another with a sheetrock that's fire retardant. I mean, we've done a lot of good things to eliminate a lot of fires in the state of Minnesota, so I think, you know, with the potential of somebody not being able to build a house because we have to have, as the chairman so eloquently talked about, having to actually borrow more money to have a backup system to put out a fire in rural Minnesota is going to be to the point of cost prohibitive. And that's exactly what we'll be doing if we don't put this through. So,
Mr. Chair. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've studied this issue for a long time. As some of you know, I've been in the real estate sales business and oftentimes new construction for many years, 35 years. And we continue, out of good intentions, to make sure that our homes are adequately insulated, try to be as safe as possible. Some of the comments have recognized the carbon monoxide detectors, the smoke detectors, the insulation standards, and now we've been talking about sprinklers. But when you start adding all of these little costs up and up and up, we're pushing a lot of families out of home ownership. When you couple that with some of the more restrictive development policies by the Met Council in the Twin Cities, we restrict the amount of lots that are available, and so as the supply goes down, the prices go up. And I don't think we're taking a major long view perspective on what we're doing to the housing industry, not only in the Twin Cities, but now this would be a major impact on rural homes in Minnesota, especially those that are not connected to a ready, stable water source like a municipal water supply. In order to facilitate new construction, you're going to have quite a very large water pump system to adequately satisfy not only the water supply of the home, but also now for an emergency water power in order to squelch any fire. It's not a cure-all. Sprinklers are not a cure-all. Have you ever seen a film on when water a sprinkler system hits a grease fire in a kitchen, it literally explodes the room in flames, spreading a grease fire by water. We haven't addressed that by the building standard and code people that are making this recommendation. The costs go up considerably, but it really goes up for the rural homeowner trying to adequately build a home for their families. One other element that we haven't considered yet is the other factors, especially on the low-income, affordable home target that we're really trying to accomplish. That's been a long-term goal in the Minnesota legislature, trying to make sure that we have adequate housing for even the most low-income of our citizens. And it's true, Senator Seaman mentioned that for at least a multi-housing application, you need sprinklers in any multi-housing application, whether it's low-income or not. But if one is trying to put in, trying to satisfy the needs, keep our costs down, oftentimes those are subsidized costs that the taxpayers are paying, we keep kind of chasing the dream. And we're by putting in more and more regulation, more and more government-imposed costs, we're not going to satisfy some of the very vital needs, the more basic living needs of our consumer by continuing to do this. I've been opposed to sprinklers. Simply, and we did have at one time a bill that went to the governor. It passed a few years ago. And as a compromise, we were going to require an all-new purchase agreement forms for new construction that we would require by law a contract element that would force the contractor and the consumer to consider buying a sprinkler system. So that issue would be forced to be considered in the transaction. I thought it was an excellent idea. Not only could the consumer now weigh in on whether or not they want to invest that in their home, but at the same time, the builder might be able to make a few extra shekels out of the deal too. And so, but it would be something not a government-mandated imposed government cost, but it would be a decision based on whether the buyer wants it or not. And if the builder wants to get to the point of reducing the cost, throwing it in, helping to help take care of it, or just make the transaction and make a few extra dollars, well, more power to the free enterprise system. But I think Minnesota, in adding one more government-imposed requirement like this, is beginning to push homeownership away for more and more people. And I think that's as important a policy consideration as this. And I think we need to carefully think about this.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Good counsel. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good counsel, answer a question for me. Isn't there a limit, a size limit on the houses that have to put sprinkler systems in right now?
Mr. Bowder.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, you've reached the limits of my knowledge on that one at the moment.
Okay, I can't, but I think it's only large homes,
sure.
If I'm not mistaken. Very large homes. So I don't think the arguments, if that's the case, I don't think the arguments about low income or people not being able to buy houses really applies here.
Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Lumber.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, we require sprinklers on multi-family homes, whether they're low income or not, on anything newly constructed. And in order to get much of the cost of scale, a lot of the low-income housing projects now built are multi-family homes. So, yes, this does impact low-income housing costs. And I think roughly the bigger homes that you made reference to are something a little over 4,000 square feet. Now, let's keep in mind, if a person is going to build and invest, and it's a very considerable expense of whether or not they're going to protect their home by the use of a sprinkler or not, I think that should be their decision. and a government-imposed cost is affecting an industry that's just barely crawling out of a major real estate recession now for the past 4 years. This is something that will again put another impediment to the success of the jobs in Minnesota. You know, the housing industry, I think, it affects nearly 23% of all of the state gross product in this state. And we continue as a state to keep putting what seems to be rather innocent and helpful, well-intended requirements on that industry, but the continued impact of layering and layering and layering of other mandates and regulations on a particular industry is going to harm the consumer ultimately.
Great.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say that I remember these exact same arguments when we put in the requirement for multifamily dwellings, and obviously that didn't happen. They're still being built.
So, further discussion on the amendment, Senator Dibble?
So, Mr. Chair, this is all a very worthy policy debate, and I respect Senator Lemmer's points of view and his perspectives, and just like I respect Senator Stumpf's, and you know, this is all a good discussion. The point is that this went into this bill, an unrelated matter, no nexus to bonding, went in without a hearing. I don't know if you want to hear. I mean, I think Senator Lemmer has said some things that which people have different information about. Suddenly we're experts on sprinklers and kitchens. I think, you know, I saw some vigorous shaking of the head when those assertions were made. I know that the housing market in other states that have sprinklers is rebounding better than ours is. I mean, this is a significant policy provision that went into this bill that shows, in my view, a lack of respect for my point of view on this subject. Because, of course, all kinds of other things that I do care about are leveraged with a provision that I don't support and haven't supported. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to take testimony and find out if there's a contrary point of view from the experts. I also need to point out the irony of the lecture that we received from Senator Ingebrigtsen about respecting public safety officials yesterday on the floor and their point of view and not substituting our judgment, and here we are doing that.
Okay, members, so I appreciate that, Senator Dibble. I know, Senator Westrom, you had a question. I saw a couple of your hands up, I thought.